Hi, everyone. Thanks for having me. It's always nice to come back to Peterborough. I spent a lot of time as a child coming up here. My father grew up in Bancroft in Peterborough. So this is where I learned to pick up a lacrosse stick, and it's where I had my butt handed to me by your community a number of times in a lacrosse arena, but also getting ginger snaps from my grandma in her home and whatnot. So it's great to come back to a place where I've got a bit of a tangible connection. As you heard from the bio, my background is from an art perspective. I went to school, McMaster, and NYU for theater and music, and spent my early years on film sets, doing Canadian television and film for a long time. And so my heart and my practice comes from an art practice, but where it's being executed now is in a very different place, shifting back towards art as I get older. So I'm going to walk you quickly through sort of like the progression of our organization and what we do. We're a very different animal. We're designated an art service organization, and most art service organizations in the province, outside of those that are local, are discipline specific. So they're focused on film or Aboriginal art or whatever they might well be. So we're an ASO, but we're not a discipline-specific ASO. When the province designated that to us, they said, go do things all over the place. So we, and because I'm maybe compulsive or maybe manic or whatever, our mission statement is to do innovative projects, research, and facilities that advance the creative sector. Really broad, so that I'm not hemmed in by anything. So we've produced feature films and television shows. We're producing a video game. We make public art. We do a whole pile of weird stuff. In an effort to be responsive, we find a lot of arts organizations get hemmed in by a very tight mandate. We will be the symphony forever, we will be the theater forever, which means they can't always be responsive to what's going on in the community. So things in our community in Hamilton at the time, this is in the this is early 2000s, were going through rapid change, and there weren't any organizations that were just ready to do whatever, as opposed to do what they thought was the best thing, and therefore their mandate. So we kept this really broad, weird mandate. And it started with this gaggle of people, and I like using this photo because this goes back 17 years now. I was working for the Arts Council in our community, and my job was to take a line off their strat plan that said, build a co-location space for artists. Figure out what that means. So interviewed hundreds of artists and went through. Hamilton at the time had a mountain of vacant property in the downtown core. Met with the Minister of Culture, Sheila Copps, and figured out how funding could work, and came back to the organization after a year of research and said, here's the list, here are the buildings, here's what the artists want, here's what they can afford to pay, here's some money, let's go do this. And they said, no. So I took the book and left, and I quit. Literally that day, I quit, and I said, if you're not doing this, I'm moving on. And this gang of people stuck with me. Handful of artists, all of us in our early 20s. We hadn't rented anything more than an apartment in our life. We had zero capital, no organization, no structure. And within 6 months, we found ourselves a 150,000 square foot cotton mill, where the owners had bought the mill, it was fully functional. President of the baby clothing company in that factory passed away. The company folded. 90,000 square feet of vacant space meant that property owner was desperate for anything that wouldn't mean the bleeding would stop in his building as far as his revenue would go. So on a handshake, the six of us started renovating offices into studios, which meant tearing our carpet and painting the walls white. And within 6 months, we had filled about 15,000 square feet with painters and dancers and architects and industrial designers and just creative people of all different types, and founded the organization Imperial Cotton Center for the Arts. We spent the first 10 years of our existence there, and moved on once that building owner no longer wanted to keep investing in his property and build more space. He wanted someone else to come in and buy it. Thankfully, it's been bought by Rob Zeidler, and he's doing amazing work with it. That's that building. So it's a massive complex in the fine neighborhood known as Industrial Sector B, where everyone wanted to be, is what we always told everybody. We had no neighbors except for empty steel factories. But it was the first time that on a street down that side, there's Lansdowne Street, on Saturdays when we had open studio days or exhibitions on the third floor, we had a lineup of a few hundred people wanting to get into what was, what they thought, a vacant building in the north end. And that's when economic development came to us and said, you are doing something different. What is this all about? And they hired us to write their first creative industry strategy, where we analyzed what the market sector was for the arts. And it was the first time the city had heard that there were more people employed in the arts than there were in steel. And for a city that's, like, its brain is steel. Like, if you're not pulled out of the molten lava that is happening at the steel plants, you're not a Hamiltonian. So to find out there was something else that was maybe more in line with our new identity really shocked them. And over the course of the next few years, we developed more properties. This was originally Tressiter Brother paper boxes, which made the paper boxes that shipped the cotton out of Imperial Cotton Center. Down the street from that was an ink company that printed the boxes. So you start to see like this industrial path of how your landscape and your built form was indicative of the people and the time and whatnot, and we wanted to try and figure out how we were reconnecting that. So every property was renamed what its earliest use was that we could find. They were renovated all by private sector developers who came to us and said, I bought this property in the 80s when I could buy anything for $100 in Hamilton. It sat empty. What would you do with it? We would very simply assess, what's the right sector of the art scene to move in here? What's the building good for? Is it a dance building? Is it a photography building? Is it an anything building? And work with them to develop the space. So they paid for renos. We found tenants. We got paid if we found tenants. So it was this very sort of hand-to-mouth kind of symbiotic relationship. Because basically all of the funders at the local and provincial level said, we'll never fund what you do, because what you do isn't art. The artists are doing art, but what we were doing was something different. So there was no funding pile that we fit in. But we kept doing it. So another 10,000 square foot building on James Street, which you probably now know about, James Street North is sort of the home of the art sector in Hamilton in a very big way. And we started moving from industrial sector B down to the center of downtown. And all of a sudden, we weren't just being put in the buildings that were being thrown away. We were being put in the buildings that were prized. So this is an 1867 hotel that was built across the street from the armory. So when you came back from service, the first thing you did is went across the street and got hammered at the what was known as the Bucket of Blood was the name of the bar, literally. And you could take a woman of the night upstairs for an hourly rental if you needed to. Now it's a coffee shop and a gallery on the ground floor and 19 studios upstairs. We're now located in the Players Guild Theater, which is an 1874 mansion with a 100-seat theater tied to it, heritage-designated building. Our job has been to teach them as an older, they're 142-year-old theater organization, the oldest in North America, how to care for their property and how to rethink their business model so they can reconnect with that art scene that's booming around them, but not necessarily in their space. And we needed to be in a fully AODA-compliant space as a nonprofit, so they brought us that. So we're in that space. Accessibility of Ontario Disabilities Act, so it's ramps and washrooms and all of those fun things that make heritage property people terrified, but necessary. And just yesterday, we're part of a group that got the keys to this building. So this is the original 1935 facade of the Westdale Theatre. It's currently covered in a bunch of plastic that will come off as soon as I'm allowed to take it off. So it's a 400-seat theater that's being completely revisioned. So it's a syndicated mortgage of foundations and individual investors to buy it for a nonprofit that's now going through the process starting in 3 weeks of raising the money to renovate literally everything inside. So another probably $1.7 million of renovating inside. So we have this path of property development going on one side, and because we're doing well at that, which is driving property tax and investments in, we're working in BIAs, we're working with the building department and zoning and all of those internal departments at the city. Cities start calling us and saying, you guys talk artist and developer and planner and whatever. What could you do for us? So we start doing programming, which we'd never done before. So this is a place called the Live Lab at Mac, which is like a theater where you're watching stuff and we're doing an EEG on your brain. I'll tell you more about that later. We start doing programming where we're using the money that we've generated from properties to encourage art productions. So we're funding music videos, we're funding dance productions, we're funding theater productions, things of that sort. We do things like Space Finder, which is this online network of spaces from yoga studios to churches that artists can use for whatever they want. And then we fall into the world of public art, where we sort of started feeling like our building projects were kind of an art piece, that we were restoring both the architecture and the built form, and we wanted to play in public space again. So we managed the City of Burlington's public art program, the Royal Botanical Gardens public art program, where we manage a million-dollar fund for buying public art for them. We start doing performance artwork of our own, so I participate in a lot of theater festivals. This was a piece about being in the moment, but it was actually a site-specific performance festival at the 270 Sherman Building, the first building we had done 15 years ago. So it was sort of an interesting moment for me to come back to a place about being now. So it was a timed light show. We do things like Tale of a Town, which in Hamilton starts tomorrow. Is a neighborhood storytelling project that turns into a podcast and a TV show on TVO, all about the neighborhood. So each year we do two different neighborhoods. But we do a lot of public consultation as well. So when a city calls us, they say, help us write our cultural plan. Go help us figure out who we are as people. We go out and do all the standard stuff, data and interviewing and all that. But we tend to like going out and doing a lot of stuff where we intervene in the public with tangible art making. So this is you know, ubiquitous festival, whatever, where there's that zone of booths that are like the local newspaper and the duct cleaner and the cat portrait person and all those, like that place, like, and that's the section that pays for the artists who are on stage because they've all paid booth fees. So we take booths and we reimagine them and turn them into things that people have to participate in. So this was a thing about how kids interact with civic spaces. So the kids got to paint on this wall while we talked to their parents and got real data, like this stuff, where people tell us where they find things interesting in their neighborhood. This was in Brantford. We were doing a consultation about how they engage and make choices about cultural experiences in their community. So we went to three different public events. The one on the left, your right, sorry, is in Georgetown. No. Applefest, I can't recall where it happens, St. George, huge quilting communities. So we took these traditional quilting patterns, and when they chose answers for a question about how much they spend on art or whatever, they got to fill in a tile based, the color was representative of their answer. So they were doing something that they felt aesthetically connected to, but for us it was pure data. On the other side, it was a comedy festival, so people were kind of half drunk. So we had, and there's kind of a, there's a hunting community there and a rural community there. So we had a bunch of goose decoys, and you had to stick it to a goose, depending on what you agreed with. Just different ways of doing it. We've done, and that first report we did for the city was sort of our impetus to start doing research. So every couple of years we do this project over again where we analyze where artists are living, where they're renting space, how much they're paying, what they're doing, and we start to track that data and be able to visualize it for people and get core stats, primarily around things like space. So when you find out that 71% of a sector feels like their space is holding them back, that should be a signal to people in ECDEV. If you change that word for education or healthcare, they'd pay attention. Our job is to try and make them pay attention to this being still a factor for the creative sector. And then expressing vibrancy is this weird offshoot for us, where we're doing stuff in buildings and culture and neighborhood. And the province had this fund to fund cultural plans across the province, and we wrote a bunch of those. And they had a little nugget of funding left at the end, and they called and said, you should apply, and like, don't have a client. Just apply with like what you'd like to think about. I'm like, all right. So looking at all these cultural plans, yeah, it's kind of a neat opportunity. So all these cultural plans that have been revamped from sometimes like the 60s, 70s got revamped. And the old problem was that no one could agree on what culture meant. So you could go to council and you'd argue about it, even though you were saying, like, invest in the theater or whatever, they'd argue about what culture was and we couldn't get anywhere. So we looked at these new plans and said, what's the new word? How are they gonna change that? So the new word was vibrant. So instead of coming up with a way to measure culture, they came up with a new word. We want vibrant neighborhoods, vibrant sectors, vibrant people. What the hell does vibrant mean? Like, each of you has a new definition, right? So we said, we wanna tackle the word vibrant. So we created this three-step process, taking stock, where we go through a neighborhood, so pick your downtown street, we count everything. Broken windows, garbage, cafes, wine bars, empty buildings, heritage buildings, whatever. We count all of the tangible stuff we can count, signs, trees, brush, whatever. And then we take your residents through that same area and have a very formulaic survey that a bunch of PhD students wrote about how to figure out what they're interacting with and seeing. What's catching their eye? What are the interactions they're seeing in that space? And then the third one, digging deeper, was the thing that we could only do at the live lab. So there's those people walking. Here's the live lab. So you're in this little 100-seat movie theater, and while you're watching a live performance or seeing a video or listening to an audioscape of a neighborhood, we're doing an EEG on your brain. We're monitoring your heart rate. We're monitoring whether you're sweating. We're monitoring whether your eyes are twitching, all that sort of stuff, so that we get your physiological response. So we can say, what's in the neighborhood? What did you think you felt about it? What is your body feeling? And are those things aligned? Where's there a through line between those things? 2 minutes. Here we go. So we take all that data, and we make it look really interesting. We're all going to have this problem, I hope. So you can look, and on the vibrant thing, is it's not everyone's definition of vibrant is the same, and it shouldn't be, just like your cultural definition shouldn't be. So you can look at a neighborhood and say, am I 35, am I female, or am I male, or whatever, and you get different data, depending on, this is what an EEG looks like. This is what your brain looks like on 8 different neighborhoods in Hamilton. Some of them you love, some of them you hate. If I had more time, I could explain why they're interesting. But this is the really interesting one. So this is what people, this is the median of everyone's sense of vibrancy as they go through neighborhoods. And where I'm really excited is not in the neighborhoods that just do this or just do this or just plateau. It's what's happening when it goes up or down. What's the thing that's twisting you to say, no, I love this block, I hate this block, I love this block. What's that thing that's changing your mind? So we've written documents about what that is. We did this study with the Ontario BIA Association, looking at all the BIAs in Ontario with a team of consultants. What we realized is that no one's tracking anything. The number of We dealt with so many municipalities, like, tell me how many vacant stores there are on your street, or tell me what the population is in this neighborhood. Nobody knows. So our job was to go and find as much of that and put it in one place as we could, and try and take those stats and make them something that are interesting for people to think about when they're looking at their BIA. What's different from your BIA versus Guelph or Barrie or downtown Toronto? What are the assets that are in neighborhoods that are really driving interesting things? BIA managers saying that natural spaces and cultural facilities are the core magnets for downtown cores. What's the business mix? I'm going to be really quick about this. The reality of Hamilton now, you may have heard like a great story about how we're being really creative and interesting. The reality is, like, literally in this moment, we are in probably the toughest time I've dealt with in Hamilton, and that we are on rampant property development phase. And these are all realities. My house that I bought 3 years ago is now worth 100% more. That's bonkers. That feels great, but I can't move anywhere in town. The rates, the property value increases within BIAs, which is tends to be where studios and cultural facilities land, going through the roof. We still have a huge child poverty problem that we said 10 years ago we were going to deal with. We haven't touched it. Minimum wage going up in 3 years, it's nowhere near the pace of real estate, so it doesn't really help. There's still a huge shortfall for affordable housing. There is arts funding, but there's only arts funding now because they didn't do any changes for a decade. So even by inflation, we're still not back at zero. So as much as there's really great stuff going on, some of those core value issues about what makes up your community, for me, haven't changed in our community. And we're going through some really rampant development where we get articles like this the other day that came out, where really fantastic people like this guy named Lamb says things like our city is an unpainted canvas and that we're a dying city. And the social media backlash to this project by our city to go to Toronto and have a Hamilton Day in Toronto has been pretty horrible when this is the PR that we get out of it. So it's a warning, and that you're having the conversation at the right time before all this stuff gets inked and put in stone. Really figure out what your values are here as opposed to generic values, and find a way to put those in practice. There are lots of interesting models to do that: land trusts, syndicated mortgages, co-ops, all sorts of things. And I know some of our other folks will talk about designation tools and things of that sort, but we can probably get into that in the open conversation.